We greet you all in the beautiful name of the beautiful game. Welcome to Pitch Invasion, the podcast for football tribalists of all shapes and sizes. And yet again, we'll be trying to tell it like it is from the world of football. My name is Lwazi Zikubu, back and alive.
I'm Xolo Makhwaza. Not in a good mood today. Not in a good mood today. I'm coming through like Gattuso today.
Please tell watch us out. Why shortly.
Emeka Nyadike here. As always, Alisson can make mistakes, but Liverpool's still on top. I know the guys don't like to hear about Liverpool,
goodness,
but hey,
you know that
what can we do?
Liverpool in his opening.
What can we do? Liverpool goes into the international break on top of the table. Excellent.
It's not about top of the table in September, Mika, as you know. It's about top of the table come May.
Then somebody slipped. Oh, yes. Someone slipped. And then there was a Crystal Palace that did a number on them when they were leading. So
and, that was a long time
Suarez
ago.
Suarez cried. Yeah. Shame.
That was way before Brazil 2014. We've already had Russia. Come on.
But it's still very fresh in memory. Very fresh in memory. What will be fresh in Manchester United fans' memory is the second win of the season, which gave Jose Mourinho a bit of some time to breathe. It's been quite a while since you've seen Jose Mourinho smile, Ola, but he could afford to get one over the weekend.
Listen, if you want to call breathing beating a poorly Burnley side, then, you know, breathe if all you want. You know, he was asking for respect last week, so, you know, did he get his respect? He beat Burnley. Look, I thought Burnley would put up more of a fight, I must be honest. United
As did I,
play
actually.
Well. And I was quite surprised by a few in fact, the starting lineup by Mourinho, which was more attacking than what I would have assumed you would have brought coming into this game. But nonetheless, you know, they got the 3 points. Could you imagine at this stage of the season, we'd be saying Manchester United got a much needed 3 points.
Does he have a choice? Because one thing is to moan, is to ask for respect. Mm. You've got to earn it.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, he put out a team that was out to win and they played to win. Mm. You know, they probably met a Burnley team that wasn't, primed for the kind of upsets that they usually, cause, but credit to United for the win and could have been more. I mean,
And that's the point I'll do on
Mr. Lukaku.
It's the point.
Scored two goals, missed the penalty, but he even missed, I think, two more chances that were much
not for the first time this season as well. And that's the point I really did want to make with United. Burnley is a type of team that will upset you if you come and you say, you know what, we're just going to contain and we're not going to give, you know, we're not going to play to the best of our ability. They can beat pretty much any side, any big side that comes to Turf Moor especially and says, we're not going to play, you know, to the best of our capabilities. But if you go to a side like Burnley and you say, you know what, we're Manchester United and we are going to play the Manchester United way, teams like Burnley don't have a chance. And that's what I thought United did well over the weekend, is they went there and they were attacking. And Jose Mourinho, this is what happens when you play attacking football with the quality that you have at Manchester United. Hopefully, he gets that message. And I know that coming out of the international break, United have got Watford away and Watford are flying at the moment as well.
Watford, we saw them, you know, win three games. Yeah. And no one was talking about them.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when I looked at the fixture and they were playing against Tottenham, and I thought to myself, like, this Watford, I did say to him last week that it was a difficult game to call. And at a point, it seemed like Tottenham, you know, had the upper hand.
Yeah.
But Watford showed just great tenacity.
Yeah. I think the problem with Tottenham, they just didn't go to the next gear. They were sort of stuck on second or third gear. They didn't actually go to the fourth, fifth gear. There was no killer instinct. They didn't actually push on. Whereas Watford, once they got that equalizer, there was a belief that they could actually go on and win this.
Tottenham's got a goal that, you know, you wouldn't say was really a goal in the sense that they actually worked something out.
Mm.
It was a situation where it was an own goal, but it was also something where there were just too many Watford players trying to clear the ball and then suddenly, you know, it went through. But you see that Watford knew at that point in time that this wasn't a goal that they considered out of being playing second fiddle to Tottenham. So they came back into that game. And, you know, one guy who really surprises me a lot is Troy Deeney. And sometimes Watford buys a lot of strikers and you think Deeney is going to go down the pecking order, but he's still there and he gives you quite a lot in terms of leadership and great.
You know what my thing is with Deeney, right? Look, at this stage of his career, he's not going to get a big move to a big club. So I think he's set on a club like Watford. But he gets the Premier League, right? Blue collar,
yeah,
hardworking, and backside up, head down sort of approach. That's what the Premier League needs in terms of sustainability. And that's why you've seen some of the more flamboyant players in the Premier League sort of don't last or, you know, don't cut it because they don't have that work ethic that is required to stay in the Premier League. So somebody like Troy Deeney gets that. And that's why I think he's become a cult hero at Watford, because even if sometimes he doesn't score, I mean, Troy Deeney's not going to score 15 goals a season. Mm. However, it's the performance he's going to put in. And even the goals that he does score, he scored one against Arsenal. He scored now against Watford. I think he's also scored against United a few seasons ago. So there are those games where Troy Deeney will be the difference because of his attitude. So I'm not surprised that he's still, you know, at Watford starting. And he's going to go down as a cult hero. He's their Jamie Vardy in some ways, you know. guy that, you know, is loved by the fans, loved by the club, obviously loved in the city. So props to Troy Deeney, I must say.
You speak of blue collar and, you know, the hardworking, the grafters of the English Premier League. Let's go on to Pogba. He's the more flamboyant of the players that are playing in England's top flight. And what happened over the weekend? Yes, we know that teams have got their designated penalty takers, but Lukaku sitting on a hat-trick. Pogba says, no, I'll take this one. He goes on to miss. Your take on that?
You know what? For me, I'm saying this as if I was a coach, right? You have your designated penalty takers, as you said. But guys, it's like in cricket. If somebody's got 49 and they're not off strike, you know, the guy that's on strike, take the single, let the guy get to his 50.
Yeah.
Okay, so in football, it's common sense. The guy's on two, you know, give him the hat-trick. However, that same evening, we saw Messi give Suarez
exactly
an opportunity. But that's a different situation because Suarez needed the goals and Messi understood that situation. Yeah. But in this case, Lukaku needed the goals. He needed the hat-trick. That's the guy you need scoring goals at United. And it was a strange decision for me. And I guess the football god spoke and Pogba missed.
Well, the thing is, you know, with Pogba and Lukaku, I think they've got a great relationship.
Yeah, they
and,
do. They
you know, they can let it go. But also, we've seen Pogba score penalty in the opening week.
Yeah.
And he thought, okay, you know, step up again and get another goal. Somehow, I think that, you know, teams have to say, okay, look, this is who our designated penalty taker is. Because the time will come when they seem to be cruising this last week, but the time will come when they need surety.
Yeah.
And they need the guy who's going to be able to score.
Yeah.
See, and now, Pogba misses.
Hat-tricks don't come every week in the Premier League.
Yes.
They don't come every week. So when there's an opportunity to seize a hat-trick, you take it, especially in the Premier League.
Do you think the fact that Lukaku missed a penalty last season as well at some stage, one or two, do you think maybe that did play into the mind of maybe Mourinho, who would have intervened from the touchline and said, you know what, no, it's fine. Yes, he's on a hat-trick, but I want the goal. So Pogba, you've taken two penalties this season. You scored both of them. You take them.
Maybe. Or maybe just it would be one of those things where with penalty kicks, doesn't matter how good you are, you will miss at one point or the other.
That's so, very true. That is very true. What I've just realized is that for the first time this season, all our teams actually managed to win. So Arsenal won, United won, Liverpool won as well.
Don't try and make it look like they haven't won. They've won four games in a row now.
I'm glad you brought that up, because my next question is, can Liverpool maintain?
Absolutely
can they
not.
Stay
Listen,
at the top of the
this team finished, you know, the fraudulence of Liverpool drives me insane. This team finished fourth last year. Yes, they went to a Champions League final. Well done. But they finished fourth last year. Okay. So for me, I'm judging them based on what I saw last season. This season, they look good. Obviously, Mane and Salah, they're firing. Firmino obviously just registered over the weekend. So they're still looking good. But they've had a cupcake schedule. Let us see. They're playing Tottenham soon. So we'll see once the Tottenhams come, once the bigger teams come, we'll see the real Liverpool. But I mean, even against Leicester, Leicester actually put up quite a bit of a fight.
They did.
And it was quite tough going for them. But I still, and Vardy was not there as well.
Yeah.
So,
and
again,
he scored
they got
a handful of goals against
them. Yes, and they've got it easy. So let me see them down the stretch. They're on top, 100%. You can't hate on that.
Mm-hmm.
However, this Premier League season stretches over 38 games, not four.
We'll maybe.
You know why I haven't said anything?
Yeah.
We're waiting for you to say something. I don't, look, for the first time in a long while,
yeah.
I'm so relaxed. I mean, even Alisson, Alisson goes out there and tries to dribble Kelechi Iheanacho and loses the ball and Leicester scores. I didn't panic as I would if it was Karius or Mignolet in goal.
Mm. Yeah, because you knew Vardy's not there, so it's not like they're going to go and get the second.
No. This team is building momentum. You're saying that, oh, they had a cupcake.
Can they maintain?
The point at the end of the day is, those are the games that Liverpool usually drops points.
Uh-huh.
Either they lose or they concede.
Yeah.
I mean, with Leicester, they always struggled until last season. They struggled to win away at Leicester. But, having said that, they've got a very difficult September because they have to play PSG, they have to play Chelsea twice, they have to play Tottenham, and then they have to play Man City at the end of
the season. Don't say they've got a difficult September. Reality's kicking in. Because they have had it easy in August, so now reality is kicking. It's not like they've
When are you going to respect the team that got to the finals of the Champions League?
No, come on, please. Okay. No, let's not talk about respect.
2006.
Then that means you must respect Porto as well for winning the Champions League.
That's a long time ago.
No, but still, Champions League and getting to the final, it's a matter of luck. And sometimes, not saying that Liverpool didn't deserve it.
I've never in my life seen a team speak. A batch of fans speak so much in the first couple of games. I don't think I've ever in my life.
You know Liverpool fans, they are literally
even
ticking time bombs.
Even when Leicester won the season that
you
year.
You can imagine how terrible
October,
it would be.
By October, November, they were still not sure of themselves.
Should they go
Liverpool,
on and win it?
Four games in.
Well, like, it'll be so much worse. That's all I have to say
anyway,
about that.
we're going on international break. Have fun for the next 2 weeks. Top of the table, Liverpool. And then after the break, we'll see.
I remember a time when Liverpool blew a 5-point lead with 3 games remaining in the season. But I'll say that in moving on and ask for a quick report card as far as Manchester City are concerned at the moment.
I think they realize that they have to try and win sometimes without being so domineering.
Mm.
And, you know, they got a reminder from Wolves.
Yeah.
And I think even last weekend, there were moments where they suddenly realize that, look, it's not every game you're going to blow people out of the park. So
yeah.
If you don't take that approach, this league is more difficult this season than it was last season for them because there are so many teams that have invested. And I'm not saying just the big teams. I'm saying, you know, who would have predicted that Watford will go
four on four. Yeah.
And even beat Tottenham amongst those four. So, you know, you talk about Leicester. Leicester against Man United in the opening game, they were quite a difficult second half for United. So, it's not an easy league. And I don't think we have this whole narrative of top eight or whatever. Anybody who is careless, like United were in the past few weeks, you see the results.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. So, we're going to move on now to some news that have been making stirring quite a fair bit of drama over the past couple of days. That is the FIFA, the best awards and the nominees are out. The top three, a lot of people are disagreeing with this. I know I'm one of them. Mohamed Salah, Cristiano Ronaldo and Modric are in the very same top three that were in the UEFA Player of the Year award sort of top three as well. And I must say, I'm defeated because for a very long time I have not been following these awards because I just think they're a big farce. But this season or this year, they've just given me an even more of an incentive to just shun them again. I don't know if Mohamed Salah, Cristiano Ronaldo and Luka Modric were the top three best players in the world last season. I don't know.
You're defeated. I'm disgusted. And I'll tell you why. Okay. Because every 4 years or so, FIFA like convincing us that the World Cup year, the Ballon d'Or, the likely winner is going to be the World Cup winner, right? In 2006, Cannavaro won the World Cup, the Ballon d'Or, right?
By literally
and
doing nothing
simply
else
because
by
of the
winning
Cup.
World Cup. Yeah.
When they snubbed Zidane and they snubbed Thierry Henry, right? They gave it to Cannavaro.
Yeah.
The justification was it's a World Cup year. Mm. Like they did in 2002, Ronaldo, 98, Zidane, and so forth going down. 2010, right, was interesting because Messi got the Ballon d'Or there. Most people felt that it should have gone to one of the Dutch players and so forth. But to me, I disagreed because I think that, you know, there's more to the season than just the World Cup. 2014, Ronaldo got it, having just won the Champions League, didn't even get out the group stages.
Yeah.
So now we get to 2018, where we have the nominees who none of them won the World Cup. Mm. So my question to FIFA is this, in terms of criteria, what are you saying this year?
Mm.
Because if you want to base it on trophies, you've got two of the three that only have one trophy
each. Yeah.
The other one has no trophies.
Absolutely.
So we can safely assume that it's not about the trophies. Okay, let's see what it could be. Mm. Could it be performances in the league? None of them won league titles.
Yeah.
Okay.
Salah's all three of them came third.
Liverpool fourth. Right. The other one, Salah, who at least was top goal scorer. So you could say, okay, he's in there by being top goal scorer, but he was not the top goal scorer in the world. Mm-mm. So clearly they did not use goals. Then we move to the Champions League.
Yeah.
Okay. You could say, fine. The two of the three won it, but Salah didn't win it.
Yeah.
Okay. So now if you want to add the Champions League,
Liverpool hates it once again.
Let me land. You are hating on Salah. So then I look at somebody like Lionel Messi and I ask FIFA this, right? Top assists, top scorer, most dribbles, most chances created, most free kick goals. He scored in both El Clasicos. He scored equalizing goals to save his team. He scored winning goals.
Took Argentina to the World Cup. He went, having retired.
Hat trick to send Argentina to the World Cup away from home. He scored in all the big games.
That was in 2013.
And on top of that, he got more man of the matches than Modric and Ronaldo combined in the Champions League. Mm. More man of the matches than anybody in the entire globe of football, right? And he scored more than anybody and assisted more than anybody. So in Ronaldo's domain of scoring, Messi was better than him and Salah.
Yeah.
In assists, which is Modric's domain, Messi's got more. In trophies, he's got more than all of them. So are we going to use the World Cup? Clearly we can't because Griezmann is not there.
Yeah.
Right? So what did they use this year? I'm disgusted. False.
I agree with him fully.
First and foremost.
Yeah.
I have no quarrels with Salah being there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was he the top three best players?
He had a phenomenal season.
Right.
Granted, Liverpool didn't win the title.
Phenomenal season. That's like Messi every year.
This is my point.
So this is my point. We've seen Messi and Ronaldo go on this goal scoring spree that we haven't seen in a long while, and we haven't seen anyone come so close. And Salah had quite a season that was similar to what they usually have.
Absolutely.
Okay, now in terms of whether all three should have been there, I don't know because I think that on a World Cup year, I think the World Cup should be the basis, and I think Griezmann.
Why, Amika? Why?
Listen, the reason being that is the pinnacle of the sport where you're supposed to.
Then have World Cup awards. Let the World Cup awards be.
Agree. They had the awards for the World Cup. Mm. What I'm saying is that over time, the awards have always gone to the outstanding player from the World Cup. I don't agree that Cannavaro should have won in 2000. I thought Zidane was, for me, the best player in that World Cup. Maybe the issue of the red card was a question, but then Cannavaro got it. But in 2010, Messi didn't have a great World Cup in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And I thought that Wesley Snyder and his guys at Chelsea, at Inter Milan had won the Europa Cup, Champions League, and they did very well. Otherwise, from the World Cup, we had the Uruguayan. Diego Forlan was outstanding player from the World Cup. But then, in 2014, Messi took Argentina to the World Cup final, but it wasn't such a breathtaking performance. Ronaldo eventually got it because of Champions League. If I go back, there was a year in 92 when Stoichkov led Barcelona to the Champions League win.
Mm.
And he had a great season. This was 92. Now, normally the votes take place towards the end of the season.
Mm.
And Marco van Basten, who, by the way, didn't even, AC Milan got dumped out, earlier. But what one thing that he did was, from the start of the new season up to the voting time, he scored so many goals, and the guys who were voting voted for him and Stoichkov raised the storm. And eventually people said, look, bottom line at the end of the day, sometimes even the World Cup seems like a long time ago, but this is the first time that FIFA will bring out the nominations just not longer, maybe a month or two after the World Cup. And that's what I find very, very curious, because this is the award for this year, and the year hasn't gone to an end. You still have Champions League starting in September. You have October and November. And maybe somebody would have done something remarkable. But if it is based on the World Cup and the Champions League, I thought, you know, the World Cup should have been a bigger denominator.
Yeah.
And back to the point that you made about Messi. There's no way you have Ronaldo in there and not have Messi.
It's remarkable.
You know, that's something
absolutely that's remarkable.
My thing with this, because Amika, right? Here's where I'm getting with this, Loaz and Amika, okay? Is that, to me, let's put trophies aside because Salah's got none.
Yeah.
Let's put goals aside because Modric has got none. So now let's base it on player performance. Yeah. Right, pound for pound, player performance.
There was
and
no
for
player.
Me, pound for pound, player performance. Mm. Trophies aside, goals aside, Lionel Messi
was better
the
than all
player.
Three.
You know what the crazy thing about
this was better than
this,
all three
right?
combined.
Lionel Messi, to me, had the best season he's ever had. I know he's had seasons where he's scored 50 goals, but those are just goals. I'm talking about performances where, you know, to me, one of the most. If I die tomorrow, touch wood, I don't, right? And I remember one of them, and if I were to recall one of the most memorable things I had ever seen in football in my life, that hat-trick to send Argentina to the World Cup coming from a goal down.
But that was 2013, not 2014.
No, this was 2017.
2017
to send Argentina to the World Cup, right? For me, that is one of the most incredible things I have ever seen.
That's what I'm saying. The FIFA award is for the calendar year, not 2017, 18.
No, they said it's for 20, they said for what you call this, 2017, 2018.
No, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
The reason why they cannot say calendar, the reason why it's not calendar, what you call this calendar year is because they're judging on 6 months. That's not even, that's half a year.
For me, it doesn't make sense because the previous award that they did took into cognizance 2017.
Mm. Yes. And to me, Modric 2016-17 was better than 2017-2018. Can you tell me that Luka Modric played better than Kevin De Bruyne in the course of, whether you want to use the year, whether you want to use 2017-2018?
We can all agree that he didn't.
He inspired Croatia to the World Cup final.
Okay, inspired Croatia, right? But here's my thing with that World Cup sort of conversation. Antoine Griezmann was the best of a great lot of France players at the World Cup. So you can inspire all you want a team to the final and lose, or you can be the best of the best and win the World Cup.
I agree.
Four goals and two assists or three assists.
Listen. So, Griezmann for me, Griezmann, Messi, and Ronaldo. Mm. If I was to pick,
that should pick, be.
You know, my other issue is, I know we have to be out of here on this topic, but I'll just conclude in saying this. Here's my problem in a World Cup year with using the World Cup to give the player of the year. The World Cup has 7 games for you to win it. Mm. There are about some 40 something games
but
in that season.
Seven games is the pinnacle.
I agree with you, right? It's the pinnacle. That is why have the World Cup awards. Mm. But in the context of the season, then we might as well throw away what's happened leading up to the World Cup and just worry about that. Because here's a scenario. What happens if one day South Korea win the World Cup and with players, majority of them playing in the in the K-League in South Korea, right? Would you be happy to say the best player in the world came from that league?
Give them the award.
I think we had one guy from
Godfrey Chitalo from Zambia scored over 100 goals.
Little saga.
And people don't agree because he's some unknown guy from Africa, but that's how it is.
I think we all agree that these the list for the FIFA Best Awards, the three, is shambolic to say the least. The fact that literally the best player,
I wouldn't say shambolic.
I wouldn't say shambolic.
Mohamed Salah is not shambolic.
He's a good player.
The best player in the world over the last season is not in there, which is just amazing for me. But we're gonna stick with European football, and we were gonna touch on Ronaldo
Who votes?
That's actually a good question.
So that's what you're saying. Maybe we can
that can be our homework for next episode. We can come up with
a
list of who votes and find out exactly how it is that they came up with these three names. But they will be named, I believe, at the end of the month. The winner of the FIFA Best Award. It could be Modric. It could be Salah. I think if sanity prevails, I hope it's going to be Modric.
I hope it's Salah.
There's absolutely no basis for giving it to Robert Salah. But anyway, we were going to touch on Ronaldo and his goal drought that continues over in Serie A. Bale and Benzema seem to have found a new lease on life at Real Madrid in the absence of Ronaldo. But I think because of time, we're just going to touch a bit on the UEFA Champions League draw. I guess I'm going to speak to you, Imika, because our dear friend here is not in that Champions League.
Can I tell something? Do you know why I watched the Champions League draw
on Tuesday?
Because I wanted to see who's going to finish third and join us in the Europa League.
On Tuesday and Wednesday, what are you going
to
be doing?
To see who's going to finish third out of all of you to join us.
There's nothing to say about the Champions League. If we had a Europa League segment, we'd talk.
All right,
but there's nothing for you to say.
Go ahead,
Imika. Champions League draw. Liverpool, difficult group. United, difficult group. Spurs, difficult group.
I don't think it's a difficult group. I mean,
it's going to be the most competitive Europa League.
We were in the Champions League finals last year and we've won it how many times? 5 times?
Oh my
PSG
gosh,
has never won it.
Wow.
Napoli has never won it. Here's my point. Napoli queried UEFA to say, what is this whole thing that you did that suddenly Liverpool ended up in our group? And I agree with them. There's no way Liverpool should have been in that pot three. Because it's unfair to the teams that are there, because now PSG and Napoli are going to be having sleepless nights.
It's the Champions League, best of the best. You play who you've drawn to play.
Liverpool. I think that was really difficult.
But on a more serious note, I think that, you know, that's probably going to be the most exciting group because Napoli, we know from last season and the past few seasons, very attacking, even though they have a new coach. But who's the new coach? The new coach is the coach who's a serial winner.
Yeah.
Who has both bitter and sweet tales about Liverpool because he lost and he won. And then, you know, he's got to play against PSG. So that's the subplot in that group is really interesting. Other than that, I think the other groups, you know, fairly, predictable.
From an English point of view, it's difficult.
It is difficult.
That Tottenham group. Tottenham group,
Inter, Barcelona.
They have to go.
That's going to be really difficult.
Tottenham has to go to Barcelona.
Mm.
We've seen them match up to Juventus.
Mm-hmm. And Real Madrid last season.
We've seen
as well.
Them also with Real Madrid.
Mm.
It'll be interesting to see
saw them against Watford as well.
I guess that's
when
they beat United the previous week, we all thought, you know, there was something to this Tottenham. But now, going on the back of this Watford game and going to play against Barcelona, it's not going to be quite...
Mm.
They wouldn't have that kind of mindset.
I'm thinking to myself, in that Barcelona game, who's going to be, unless they do a triple man job on someone like Messi, because obviously you know that Messi is literally the lifeblood of anything good with Barcelona. Who in that Spurs team is going to be watching Lionel Messi? They don't have a Kante or...
If they had a Moussa, maybe that's the kind of game you bring on Moussa Dembele. Problem is that Moussa Dembele...
a defensive job.
Yeah, Moussa Dembele can do a good job sometimes, but he's slow.
Yeah.
And Messi is... It's not just fast. Mm.
He's evasive.
He doesn't think.
Yeah.
It's almost like the ball. The ball is glued to his body and his feet.
Mm.
And that's something that I worry about for Tottenham. And, you know, they went with this whole idea of playing three at the back.
Yeah.
And having their wing backs push forward. But we'll see what happens. Of course, they still have, Victor Wanyama, maybe.
Oh yes, that's true. He's also still in the side. But some very interesting sort of matchups as far as the Champions League is concerned. Europa League, we saw a couple of interesting matchups as well. But we'll move swiftly along and go back to the whole Ronaldo issue where his coach over at Juventus says that nobody scores 40 goals in Serie A. And, you know, based on what we've seen so far this season, perhaps he's right. Ronaldo is sort of going to struggle to break that 40-goal barrier.
Well, maybe his coach does not remember a certain guy by Gonzalo Higuain who did score, I think it was 30, 40 or something.
No, it wasn't it was his total goal, not
oh, it was
not
in all competitions.
But
yeah,
I'm saying in all competitions, right? But, look, you know, the one thing that I think Ronaldo is struggling with at Juventus is being part of the team.
Mm.
Because at Real Madrid, it was more centered around him. So he didn't have to actually make runs to open up for other players.
Yeah.
I've actually watched every single game of Juventus this season. And what I've noticed is that Ronaldo is not making runs for other players.
Mm.
And I think that's negating a lot of what Juve did well, have done well in the last 7 years in a row that they've won the league, is that they actually play well as a team. You cannot identify a Juventus player and say, he's the best player in the team or he's the most crucial player. Everybody puts in a shift there. And he just has to, Ronaldo has to adjust to that. And I think the moment he adjusts, he will score. I mean, Higuain scored. Mandzukic is scoring, has scored in every game now. So once he gets to that understanding that, listen, there's something you might have to sacrifice ego-wise in terms of wanting to be at the end of every single play, but it will open up for you. Just be part of the team and chances will come. And I think the moment Ronaldo just allows himself to, you know, take a step back and open up for the rest of the team, goals will he will score.
Yeah,
that's going
this is one instance where I'll say I don't think there's a cause for alarm. Ronaldo just needs to score one goal and then the rest of it will come. It's a new league, it's his new teammates, he will adjust. He also needs to understand that, you know, when you play with other people, it doesn't have to be about you all the time. He can create chances. I mean, I was looking at the start from last weekend, Mohamed Salah and David Silva. They both created 13 chances more than anybody else in the league. And people focus on what he's missing. But Ronaldo is not doing that. He's not creating enough chances for his teammates. He needs to see maybe he can provide some kind of decoy. And then eventually when no one is paying attention, he'll get his goals. But what we've seen in the past whenever we try and criticize him, like even last season, he started out and he wasn't scoring goals. And then suddenly once he started scoring, he's scored more goals than everyone else. So,
well, you know,
Champions League is coming and Ronaldo might just find his range.
World football has told him that it's good, it's fine for him to just go and not assist or do anything else. So, hey, look, he's gonna find the back of the net, but perhaps, as Paula does put it, Juventus are a bit more of a team-centered outfit, more than Real Madrid, who were very much focused on the individuals, who were fortunately for them good enough at that level. But I think now taking the most shots in Europe already.
26.
And still no goal. But on the other side of that coin is Bale and Benzema back at Real Madrid, and Lionel Messi was quoted a couple of days ago, in fact I think yesterday. Saying that Madrid aren't as good without Ronaldo, which is probably true. And sort of my finding with that is that Madrid are going to play better football without Ronaldo, but they're going to win less. That's where I stand. I don't know your thoughts on that.
I agree with you 100%, because I think the interesting thing with Real Madrid when they did have Ronaldo was that in a strange way, you know, it stifled the creativity
Absolutely.
Of certain players that, you know, needed to be also at the end of things. Like, for example, Gareth Bale. Gareth Bale is capable of 40 goals a season. He's more than capable of that. Mm. But when Ronaldo was at Real Madrid in the period that he was there, the problem was that Bale often had to look up and see where Ronaldo is. It was the same with Asensio. It was the same with Benzema. And I don't think that, you know, as much as they did win 3 Champions Leagues in a row, that is, you're always going to win when you have Ronaldo on the field. Let's not get that twisted.
Yeah.
It's just the aesthetic play. This season, Real Madrid are actually playing some darn good, beautiful
football.
They
look very good.
It's
they
good
do.
To watch. Mm. And I think now that Ronaldo's gone.
Messi says otherwise. He says...
Well,
I don't know if he's been watching.
It's not like Messi's going to come out and say, actually, you know what, these guys suck. No, that's not what he's going to say that.
I think he misses Ronaldo.
You think
does.
So?
Yeah,
he probably does.
That whole sort of partnership has been broken, and I don't think it'll ever be.
Partnership with ever,
well, whatever it is that they had. I don't want to call it a rivalry because I think it more influenced the one player than the other. But whatever it is that they had, I don't think.
Each other.
I think the one pushed the other. or the other was pushed by the other's performances. It wasn't a two-way thing, but that's pretty much all we do have as far as Ronaldo is concerned and European football. We're going to take a bit of a breather when we come back, focus a bit more on South African football. Of course, the past weekend belonged to the MTN8, and we know who's through to the final. More on that when we come back.
Only SuperSport can put you in a front row seat to the best football leagues this season. Catch every Premier League, UEFA Champions League, UEFA Nations League, ABSA Premiership and La Liga match live. And now, it's the only place to watch every minute of the Serie A on SuperSport 9. Get your front row seat and watch all the football that matters. Only on SuperSport.
Welcome back to Pitch Invasion. We've just had a look at European football. It's the turn, though, of South African Dizki, as we call it, this side. And the MTN8 semi-finals are a thing of the past, and four has become two. And as far as Imika is concerned, it's the two that he always thought was going to be there.
As a guest, never been told.
For once, this is not Liverpool, man. Give credit.
Wow. Okay, you know. Now I'll give you credit. You call that.
But why did you actually say that? Why did you base, before you even saw the second legs, why did you actually say Cape Town City and SuperSport United in the final?
I saw both games. Mm. Starting with the Chiefs game, I thought, you know, they were quite lucky to come back into that game the way they did. But then one thing I realized is they're going to play the second leg in FMB.
Yeah.
And they're not playing against Orlando Pirates or Sundown, so they're not going to get all of that yellow wall that they usually get there. But also, you know, they went into that game trying to say, okay, we've got these two goals from there. And those goals were the biggest undoing, because it was almost like SuperSport United went into that game like, you know, we get a goal, we're going to hit them. If they score again, and...
Do you think how matters sort of transpired in the league game during the week, where Chiefs were 2-0 up and then late, conceded two goals and then ended up drawing, which meant they still haven't won this season? Do you think that played a role?
They've had a terrible season in the league, and we always thought it was better off for them in the cup because of how they took out Crystal Stars. But, you know, playing against SuperSport United actually have become such a good cup team.
Yeah, that's very true.
And, you know, they've also gone on a run. They've won, I think, four games on the trot now.
Yeah, they lost the opening to Cape Town City.
And that's something that they have going for them. And, you know, quite unfortunate for Chiefs, because a win in this game would have given them a lift. But right now, it kind of sums up the entire season of how terrible it is. And for Sundowns, I knew that there was no way they'll play. The big mistake they made was resting players for the first game and hoping that Cape Town will come into the second game. And, you know, the one thing we saw with Cape Town City, they had a one goal lead, even though they considered a goal. They came into that game and defended
they did a job.
Like they were Italians.
They did a job.
You know, and, you know, at the point that I remember that Benny McCarthy had played under Mourinho at Porto, so maybe he learned something.
But I mean, I think Sundowns pretty much were in the same sort of, you know, mind space as Kaizer Chiefs. They were knocked out of the CAF Champions League midweek, so to bounce back and immediately focus on another high stakes game of football, I mean, if there is any team in South Africa that is capable of doing that, it is Sundowns. But this time didn't quite work out.
I think maybe the CAF commitments are slowly starting to take a toll on. I know the players also take a toll, but maybe on Vitor in terms of his tactics, because I can imagine, you know, every week you almost have to plan a different strategy, how you're going to approach it. And, you know, league games and cup games, the strategy is different because the psychology also, you know, comes into play. Yeah. Because in a second leg game, you know, you have to switch the player's mentality from being down and knocked out in a cup the following week. And then this week they have to come back and re-motivate themselves to get two goals against a stubborn defense. And I think that may have probably, you know,
terrible week for both them and Chiefs.
It really was a
terrible week, and I'm sure it's one they will want to forget really quickly. But let's talk about the two sides that are through, though, to the final. SuperSport United, Cape Town City, yet again through to the final. And you know what, as much as young as Cape Town City are in South African football, they've shown that when it comes to games that matter, they've got what it takes to get over the line. And I have to give a lot of credit to Coach Benny McCarthy for that.
Absolutely. I mean, look, Benny has done well. And it's one thing, you know, I mean, look at Pizzo. He played in Europe. Sometimes people forget that these players who, or these coaches who, come from very good background. Because when you play for some of the top teams in Europe, you get, so beyond your coaching qualifications, there are moments in games where you remember, you know, at certain points in your playing career, what did your coach tell you? You look at a player, for instance, like George Weah, if you became a coach, you know, this is a guy who played under Wenger and played under a few coaches. Yeah. And that's something that we've seen with Benny. There are moments where, you know, he switches his tactics. In the other game, which was the league game earlier in the game, I saw moments where I thought, you know, he needs to try and check his temperament and all that. But in this game, you know, he had those moments, but in the second half, when he needed to rally his boys, you could see that there was a tactical discipline, which he tried to instill there. I'm hoping that we can get Steven Pienaar, Bradley Carnell, and a few more of them back in the league, and then ultimately, you know, we get a much wider pool of younger coaches with good talent. But credit to Benny McCarthy, he's gonna have his hands full when he plays against SuperSport United in the cup final.
That's a fantastic point you do make there about the Steven Pienaars and the Bradley Carnells, all those young coaches coming in and filtering back into local football. Caetano Tembo through to the cup final as well, and I want to ask you all that for your predictions, because last season it was SuperSport United that won the title. They're back trying to defend it this time. Do you think Cape Town City can actually do the job?
I think Cape Town City will win, and I think in Benny's situation, that's another final that he's in now.
Yep.
And I think he would have learned from that previous loss, and I think also for the team, they now believe in themselves more. And I think Benny will get, like Amika said, the experiences of playing in big cup finals. I feel Benny will be easy for him this time around. It's okay. Last time, this is maybe where we went wrong. We were either too conservative. This time we've got nothing to lose. It's against the defending champions. Guys, the first cup final of the season, let's go for it. And I think that momentum is going to help Ajax. Because if you kept, remember, they shut out the league champions, who just come off continental duty. So for them, you know, how can you not be motivated that you can't beat any team in a once-off game when they held on?
SuperSport United are probably one of the most consistent cup teams in South Africa in the last few seasons. So, and Caetano, you know, he did well when he was briefly in charge the last season and playing in Africa. Maybe this is his chance to write his name and not always fly below the radar. So,
well, the final
first time winner for either coach. So that's also
going to be a very nice matchup between the two. Final coming up on the 29th, if I'm not mistaken. We're going to move on to the deadline, which sort of went under the radar for a local football, but it wasn't, the only thing that was good news as far as the Cape Town City, the MTN8. They also managed to get the services of Tekelo Randi for 3 years, which I'm not too sure if it's a sort of a win-win for both player and team, Ola?
You know what, I think both have nothing to lose, right? Because Cape Town City, for them, I think they also need experience up front.
Yeah.
I know they've got in the midfield with Deco and them, they've got it at the back, Benny's there.
Yeah.
And I think they need somebody with a cool head up front that knows his way to goal.
Yeah.
And Tekelo Randi's proven in the Premier League. He's played in the Premiership. He's played with Benny before. Yeah. So I think there is an understanding in terms of what is expected of him. And he's got nothing to lose. He's coming back to South Africa with I think I'm actually surprised that nobody else thought of getting him, and I think it's a great deal for both players and clubs.
It's a fantastic deal. I mean, Tekelo will score. I mean, he will do well. I'm quite disappointed that it hasn't worked out for him in Europe, because I thought with his pace, he was really suited for the English league. But it was quite obvious that maybe there were other factors. But he will do well, and it's a good thing that he's gone to Cape Town, because Apart from the fact that Benny is his coach, Benny is a striker, and I'm sure there are things that Benny can help him work around his game. But the one thing that I enjoy about him is his pace. I'll never forget because he scored the goals against Nigeria. I thought they should rename the stadium in Uyo Tokelorante Stadium. Godfrey Walusumbi.
Yes, from
Kenya. Mm. He's one player who's been really impressive, in East African football for quite a while. So I was surprised on the last day to see that he's come through to Chiefs.
I know that deal took a while because there's a lot of controversy as well with that deal. And I think the fact that they threw him straight into the starting lineup, really did surprise me as well. I thought
that says a lot about Chiefs.
It does.
It says a lot about
Chiefs. But here's the thing though. It's not as if the left backs that have played for Chiefs this season have done badly. In fact, the left back has been probably one of the strongest positions.
But you know what, Lozzi? I tell you what, okay? Allow me to exercise some history, right? Kaizer Chiefs, when you think about it, they have a thing of knowing how to sign good left backs from Africa.
Yeah.
Remember they did it with Basera?
Oh, yes.
And then they did it with David Obua. Maybe they've identified another type player like that. So for them...
He's a fantastic player.
Not to prove himself to anyone.
I think that he will settle in. Yeah. And he will probably give them a lift when he gets going.
Here's a bolter for you. Phakamani Mahlambi. Still a young man, but he's now back in South Africa. And are you surprised that Mamelodi Sundowns actually snapped him up?
Am I surprised Sundowns with the most money? No, but I'm surprised he came back to South Africa. And I'll tell you why. When I look at Phakamani, I think the guy's got all the ability that he should be in Europe somewhere. He should be right now in playing in a top division somewhere. Mm. And I tell you why I don't like this move, because you've just played well in the Absa Premiership, right? I wouldn't say you dominated, but you've made your mark. You've planted your flag. Would it not be time for you to then, okay, after Al Ahly, let me go plant my flag elsewhere? Mm. And at that age, I think there's a lot for him to learn and absorb that can take him to the next level.
Yeah.
I know most people, like May Mahlangu, for example, right? He's the type of player, he's moved around in Europe, but he never once thought about coming back because, he made his mark in his earlier days and thought, you know what, let me go elsewhere and plant my flag. And I think Phakamani Mahlambi is at that level of May Mahlangu where he can actually go to a European team, not Division 2, Belgium, but Division 1 somewhere, and actually start and play well.
Yeah.
How can you play? There's no way you can play for Al Ahly. You know when they say if you reach for the stars, if you reach for the moon and you fall short, you at least land amongst the stars. Surely, once you leave Al Ahly and you go to Europe, you land amongst somewhere, Cyprus, Turkey,
that's the difference with West African players. If they find their way to North Africa, they're not coming back. They're gonna go.
Yeah.
That's like a launch pad.
Mm.
But for South African players, it's how to put it is,
I don't get it.
Is Egypt wasn't a means to an end for him. The end for him was, okay, I want to go and play for Sundowns or play for Chiefs or Pirates, depending on which side of the spectrum they rise. And that is still a problem for South African players and a big problem for Bafana because, you don't get that much quality with the players not expressing themselves to the fullest.
You know, I saw something interesting the other day that Cape Verde, the squad of Cape Verde that we played a few years ago in the qualifiers, they have 3 times more players playing abroad than the Bafana squad.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
3 times more.
Cape Verde,
which is probably half the size of Bloemfontein. Mm. 3 times more. So I think we actually need to start getting our guys to realize that, guys, the grass is actually greener on the other side. And just
mean you're
go
have to work a bit
plant
harder.
Your flag, spread the word about South African football, let people know that we have players here, and be the example. You look at some of the Brazilian players. I mean, Pele never went to Europe, right? Ever. He went to the States. And that was late in his career. But after that, you started seeing Brazilian guys actually say, you know what, let's try our luck abroad and let's plant our flag as Brazilians and let's bring our style.
Yeah.
Before you know it, which top team doesn't have a Brazilian player in it? So Nigeria, Amika can attest to this, Nigeria, they have players
Everywhere.
Every corner of the world.
Post World Cups.
Yes.
All the players world. Moved. Mm. So, I mean, William Troost Ekong, yeah, the center back, he's gone to Udinese and he's doing quite well.
Yeah.
Leon Balogun went to Brighton from Germany. So a lot of them, players, even the guys in Turkey, some of them moved. They were good moves for all of those players. So, I still worry, but I hope, for the sake of Bafana, we're going to be a few more players go out to Europe to strengthen and get some experience.
Let's quickly talk about Bafana and expand a bit more as far as the program is concerned for them. They're up against Libya this weekend in the AFCON 2019 qualifiers, and already the week is still very fresh, but they've been struck with a couple of injuries, Bongani Zungu and Themba Zwane not available. How much of a knock is that to Stuart Baxter's plans?
Well, add Hlompho Kekana to that list as well, because he's also not available.
Yeah.
And that's a massive loss. I mean, those are, you know, if we were to do a top 10, those three would be in the top 10.
Yeah, I think also Lebo Motiba, Dean Foreman and Bradley Krobler, you know, still question marks about what are their...
About their fitness.
Yeah.
Mm. It would be a shame to lose Krobler as well, especially he's hit a good solid form, vein of form. Yeah. So, not good news to start the week for them, but as far as Libya are concerned, how much of a challenge are they to Bafana's ambitions of making it to Cameroon 2019?
They are what you call a dark horse. You know, war torn, all their players, you know, so for the most part, they haven't been playing their games in Libya. My worry is the tendency for Bafana to always look at these rankings of team and say, okay, this is not a team that they want to play with. They just have to sit up. Otherwise, that win against Nigeria will suddenly become not important.
Yeah. And they don't want to be or find themselves in that position. It is, of course, the international week for a week or two, if I'm not mistaken. And what we do have is the inaugural UEFA Nations League, which will be pitting pretty much the biggest nations in European football against each other. It's like a mini European sort of championships, if you want to put it that way. Emeka, please give us a bit more of an idea of what this championship is all about.
Well, I mean, UEFA's idea is to make the international weeks more interesting, because typically with Europe, unlike Africa, they have their European Championship every 4 years, and then they have the World Cup. So in between, they've come up with this UEFA Nations League where they have used all the coefficients to divide their teams into four groups, four leagues rather.
Yeah.
A, B, C, D, and then each of the leagues have four groups. Some have three teams, some have four teams, and then they've got a situation where you award points, so it's almost like you're playing in the Champions League. And then they have what makes it more interesting is that, you know, they have relegation and promotion. So the teams play home and away over the months of September, October, November, which means every international window they play two games. And then the winners of the groups from Group A, runners up from Group B, C, D, the B, C, D group winners and promotion to the top league, while the teams who come bottom from A, B, C get relegated. It seems kind of complicated, but the idea is that the four group winners from the top league end up in the semifinals, and then they play in next year June, and then they play the final. What it means invariably is that African teams and every other people don't have a chance to play against.
Which is exactly where I was going, is that for me, you know, this is a terrible idea for UEFA because it further divides, you know, we're supposed to bring people together with football.
Yeah.
But now you're just excluding people. So I cannot see Germany versus Nigeria, for example, for a long time. I won't see, Brazil versus Spain playing a friendly for another long time. And it's a terrible idea. I understand UEFA are doing it for money reasons. They cannot con us and tell us this is to strengthen, you know, the teams in Europe. And it's just killing the spirit of the game, because the whole point of friendlies, you want to see teams that have never played each other or would never see each other. So,
I'm looking at some of the fixtures from the opening round of this UEFA Nations League, and You've got some absolutely fantastic ties. Germany up against France, Italy, Poland, England, Spain. That's a big one. France, Netherlands. That's going to be entertaining.
That's the game I'm looking forward to. That game.
Yeah, it's going to be entertaining.
France, Netherlands, you know, and then Spain, Croatia as well.
Spain, Croatia as well. We know exactly why you know they want that to happen. So we're fast running out of time, but before we close, we're going to touch on what happened a couple of days ago with Tamsanga Kabuza of Orlando Pirates. Rather unfortunate scenes that took place in a league game where he assisted a goal and own goal that Black Leopards scored, and Pirates were 1-0 up, and then he took his shirt off, threw it at the fans. The fans, which is really funny, sort of threw it back at him because, and he was really annoyed at what they've been saying about his performances, whether rightly or wrongly. You know, let's be honest, he hasn't been performing up to scratch of what an Orlando Pirates striker, you know, should be performing. And let's not forget, he's also a Bafana striker as well. But what sort of transpired after that, Paula, not pretty at all. And him sort of walking off the pitch, the players trying to stop him from doing that, having an altercation with the coach and then having an altercation with the fans again. It just wasn't pretty from a Kabuza point of view.
Look, it wasn't pretty, but I'm not against Kabuza in this situation.
How so? How are you not against?
Everybody's got the right to express themselves. I mean, didn't Eric Cantona express himself? he's a club legend at United. Nobody, you know, villainizes him for that incident, you know. So, you know, he was a bit frustrated and could be his performances, also the fans booing him. And I don't see anything wrong with that. Like I said, Eric Cantona, right, damn near karate kicked somebody and he's revered as this great icon,
Eric Cantona.
Kabuza didn't kick anybody.
Listen, Eric Cantona.
He was performing.
Was scoring goals and performing.
Yes.
But he's...
Kabuza was very unprofessional. Mm. You know, his actions and, you know, that's not the image you want young kids to have when they watch a professional player.
Yeah.
That is very unprofessional. Yes, he's apologized, and I hope everybody forgives him, but...
Let me ask you a question, Amika. What was worse, what Sergio Ramos did or what Kabuza did?
We're talking about Kabuza here and Kabuza Gates.
And what was Ramos Gates? What was worse? Do you know what I mean? Kabuza did not harm anybody.
He did not change their team's fortune.
Is Kabuza a striker?
We'll leave you with that question and maybe we'll answer it when we come back for another episode. But that's all we do have for episode 5 of Pitch Invasion. We've covered pretty much everything as far as world football is concerned over the past week. Next time we do speak to you guys, it will be after or during the international window. I'm sure a lot to speak about there with the AFCON qualifiers as well as the inaugural UEFA Nations League set to kick off in the next couple of days. But for myself,
thank you very much, and never walk alone.
Oh, goodness. Bye for now.